Please stand by. We're about to begin. Good day, everyone, and welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange conference call. Today's call is being recorded. Now, for introductions, I would like to turn the call over to Ms. Jennifer Chien. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Kevin, and welcome everyone to today's WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. My name is Jennifer Chien, and I will be the moderator for this call. This call is being recorded, and early next week, an MP3 file and presentation will be available on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. You may replay it at your convenience. If you have not yet joined the e-meeting, please do so now. An e-meeting URL is available to you from the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Today's presenter is John Kirkwood. John is a senior software engineer working for IBM. His primary responsibility is technical and marketing support for WebSphere Data Interchange. He assists customers with installation and implementation of WebSphere Data Interchange. John has provided solutions to hundreds of WebSphere Data Interchange customers worldwide. His customer base includes most major industries. Today's topic is configuring WebSphere Data Interchange XML support for CICS Transaction Server. The webcast will include a PowerPoint presentation. During the presentation, all lines will be muted. After the presentation, I will ask attendees to answer a few quick questions via e-meeting polling. After that, the lines will open for a question and answer period. If you are in the e-meeting, you will see the presentation. If you are able to access the e-meeting at this time, you may access the presentation from the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site by clicking View Presentation link or by going to any IBM.com site and type in 700-8278 in the search box. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to John.
Welcome, everyone. This is John Kirkwood. I have been doing Level 2 support for WebSphere Data Interchange for quite a few years now. I recognize a few of the names in the same time session. Thanks for joining. Start with the overview slide. So basically, what we're going to do in this session is talk about specifically the CICS support for XML translation. And we're going to review the data interchange installation guide a little bit, the XML toolkit requirements, the Java requirements, the step 41, which is the crux of the XML support, the installation process in the installation guide. It's number step 41. We're going to go over that quite a bit. And then we have just basic operation type things that I'm going to go over, how to operate the XML parser, how to shut it down, how to start it automatically, those kinds of things. And then I'll go through some problem determination, which I think will cover at least some of the basic things that you might run into when you get started with the parser. Next slide. Now, from the installation guide, you can see there's a link there given to you. Of course, it's on the web. You probably all know that already. And there is basically, we've got three particular levels of CICS that we currently support. Version 1.3 of Transaction Server. Now, realize that's been withdrawn from service as of April 30th this year. The CICS version 2.2 and 2.3, those are the most heavily used versions that we have today for WDI, anyway. There's another kind of a subtle requirement that sometimes gets missed, and this is a C++ requirement. And this is not a separate product that you purchase or anything, but it is something that you do need to configure for the actual data transformation engine to run. That's actually needed even not just for XML support, but even for other types of support that run the DT process. Now, as I said before, that this basic presentation is going to cover step 41 primarily, which is, again, just the crux of the installation process. Now, next slide. The XML toolkit, that's a requirement. WDI uses the toolkit in actually whatever environment you're running in, batch or CICS. And the toolkit just offers all of the parsing routines, that are provided at no cost. So there's this toolkit that you can go out and order or download from the web is no cost software. But the level that you use actually depends on what CICS version you're running. And if you want to see the latest tech note, I have a link to it here. This will discuss, you know, from a WDI perspective, what level of the toolkit you need. And it's very important that you follow this because you have to run the certain levels of the toolkit for the various different levels of CICS. And that also covers batch, too, by the way. The transaction server, I'll start with version 1.3. Basically, this is the oldest level that we support, and that goes back, you know, probably too far. But as far as the XML parser uses the Java edition version 1.2, and there is still an available download that you can get from the XML toolkit site. I have the link there. Next slide. There's also a newer level needed for transaction server version 2.2. This requires version 1.4 of the toolkit that uses the XML4J parser. And in order to get the 1.4 version, you need to install the 1.6 version of the toolkit. And there's a link also to that particular download. And last but not least is CICS Transaction Server version 2.3. This is what I'm going to focus on mostly the rest of the session. I think that's probably the more predominant level of CICS customers are running today. The particular, you could still use the old XML4J parser that we have for version 2.2, but it's not recommended because there's a newer, better way to do it, and that is by using this PTF, WDI PTF, UK11504, which actually supports an embedded parser, and which is good news. That means you no longer need to get the separate installation of the toolkit. You don't have to go out and download any XML toolkit and also install that software. It's all part of the Java SDK 1.4. And I think that's the level that CICS pretty much recommends if you run at when you're at version 2.3, although I believe it still does work with the older level. Next slide. Now, the Java requirements, these get a little more difficult. There's quite a bit of activity in Java, as you all probably know. Just to get you started, there's the basic Java website. That's the IBM website that we have for the Java support. And then there's a good red book that I found extremely useful. If you're about to enable Java in CICS, those kinds of things, you definitely want to get this red book. As far as specific requirements for Java for the various CICS levels, you've got for version 1.3, this was the first level to support Java. But again, 1.3 of CICS has been out of service. And also is the Java Developer Kit, 1.1.8. So I'm not going to recommend that you use this, you know, especially in some new implementation. If you're going to be installing, you know, the XML support new, you definitely want to go with one of the newer CICS levels. And we're moving on to the version 2.2, the transaction server, that supports JDK 1.3, but it does require a separate installation of the toolkit. So now for 2.3 CICS, which is, again, the recommended approach, we support the SDK 1.4, just to reemphasize, it includes the parser, so you do not need to go out and install a separate toolkit. So in other words, the Java SDK kit includes the actual XML parser. But you do need to have the WDI PTF in order to support that particular parser level. Next slide. Now moving on to step 41, some specifics. Now you only need to do step 41 of the installation guide if you're doing XML forms of translation, such as EDI to XML, XML to EDI, or XML to ADF, you know, et cetera. If you're not doing any XML translations, in other words, just EDI or data format type translations, you do not need to do this step. Now, if you are going to be doing XML translations in CICS, you will want to increase your region size. Now, that's not your EUDSA value, but the raw region size that you have on the job card when you start up the region. I increased mine by 128 meg. I mean, you may not need to go that far, but Java does require a lot more memory, so you want to definitely take that into account. And realize the memory that it uses is coming just from the native, you know, MVS or ZOS system, not from the actual extended DSA storage. The installation guide covers the version 1.3 and version 2.2 CICS implementations pretty thoroughly, and it's slightly different depending on what level you have. So I'm not going to really go into all of those details. Again, the focus is going to be on version 2.3, and in the first case, it'll be how to actually, let's say you're at 2.2 or you're running with the older toolkit and you want to use the newer implementation that we have. We'll start with that, which is basically how to change your existing implementation. And then after that, we'll get into how to set up a new installation using this PTF. Next slide. Okay, after you apply that PTF, you will want to replace the jar file, edijavaparser.jar file, that you currently have in your home directory. The home directory you see there on the right in lowercase, that it basically needs to be changed to account for where your existing jar file is. And be sure to use binary, of course. Now, since you're pointing to older Java level, of course, you're going to need to go into the JVM profile, JVM being the Java Virtual Machine profile, DSH JVMPR, to point to the new level of Java. In other words, you probably would be going, in this case, from 1.3, for example, to 1.4, so you have to make sure to change that profile to point to your proper Java files. Finally, for just changing your implementation, you would, of course, this is what's coming off of the PTF, you want to take the, back up here. Now, you want to remove the old toolkit file, the Xerces jar file and the XML parser APIs.jar files. You remove those from your home directory because those are no longer needed and are part of the Java 1.4 implementation. Next slide. Okay, for setting up a new implementation, in other words, you're going to just start out using XML data transformation under CICS, and you have this PTF. It just gives you the 7 steps that you need to run through. Basically, you have to set up your HFS, which is your hierarchical file structure. Take a home directory name. It doesn't have to be this name, but this was just given in the install guide, so I just thought I'd carry it forward. And then, of course, you've got to copy the WDI jar file, which came off of the PTF, and it shows you the actual target library, that SEDI-HFS2, and that member, FXX-SDK-14. You have to copy that into your home directory, and of course use binary. Step 3, you want to copy the WDI properties file. That is, if you wish to change the default settings, which you may want to do that, but you don't have to. And you'll find the sample that we provide, or with the default settings already in it, in that target library SEDI-SAM2 under FXX parse. So if you wanted to make some changes to that property file, which there aren't a whole lot of settings in there, but for example, the number of parsers that you want to run is probably the most important, and it starts out with 2. If you don't have a high volume, I would even bring that down to 1. But if you wanted to, if you had a high volume, you definitely would want to consider going up to maybe 3 or 4. But 5 would probably be about as far as you'd want to go. Step 4, you have to create 2 new subdirectories in this home directory, and these are for the DTDs and for the trace files that come out of the actual WDI Java parser. Step 5, if you're going to be using any type of validation options on your perform statement, you're going to want to copy your schema or your DTD into the DTDs directory. If you're not doing validation, that's not necessary. Number 6, of course, you want to make sure the CICS region, the user ID that operates the region, has the proper authorities, read, write, execute on the directories involved here, which would include your home directory, as well as the DTDs and traces directories. In jar files, you need read access. Now, discussed this a little bit already, the JVM profile, by default anyway, we use DFH JVMPR. And be sure to, adjust your SIP parameter, system initialization table parameter, that is, to point to the directory where this profile exists. And again, the JVM profile is not something provided by WDI. We'll go into that on the next slide. Go ahead. And basically, I gave you a sample in the actual presentation. If you go, you know, after the replay is done, and if you go to the actual presentation, there will be an embedded sample in here. This just came from CICS and not from WDI. And I just go through the steps here how to adjust this to accommodate the WDI implementation. Basically, you just have to change the work dir, point to your home directory, and you've got to change your class path to point to the actual WDI Java Parser.jar file. And again, if you go to the presentation afterwards, you'll be able to get a copy of the sample for your own use. Next slide. As far as operating the parser, we're moving on to something different. It's now you have the product installed, or you have all the steps performed. And how you basically run the parser, you could auto-start it, which we'll get into later. But if you want to manually start the parser, you would use this terminal transaction from a CICS session called EDI-7. And it starts the long-running transaction EDI-J and EDI-9. And we'll talk about those in detail in a minute. They must be started, you know, for you to be able to do any XML processing. So in other words, if you forget to start the parser, you're going to run into, you know, some obvious error conditions. Now, the number of parsers is controlled by the EDI parser.properties file. Moving on to EDI-8, this is the complement to EDI-7, basically used to stop. And it's a terminal transaction as well, so you can enter it from a CICS session. And it just basically cleans up. It stops EDIJ parsers if you have multiple of them, and the long-running EDI-9 parser. I'll talk about EDI-9. This is basically, it's a background transaction, not something you... Oh, next slide, sorry. We talk about the EDI-9 transaction. This is, it's a background transaction, so you do not run it from a terminal. It started automatically by EDI-7, and it basically monitors all of the parsers that are running to make sure that they're still going. And if they're not, it will automatically restart them for you. EDI-J is another long-running transaction. In other words, once started, they don't end. They stay on your system. And basically, that's another background transaction, so you don't actually run EDI-J at a terminal. It's started by EDI-7. And this is basically a long-running transaction that is waiting for requests to perform XML data transformation. Next slide. Okay, as far as if you're going to be using some of the XML validation options like XML schema val or XML validate, you definitely have to put the schema or the DTD in the DTDs directory. One key thing that you have to be aware of is the encoding that's on the XML prolog. You want to make sure you have an EBCDIC-based encoding. If you want to change, for example, if you had UTF-8, change that to IBM-1047. If you don't need the XML validation, that does come with a cost, a processing cost, so turn it off if you don't need it. It will definitely run faster. Next slide. Okay, I thought I would get into some of the kind of other non-WDI related commands just to give you all a start. I'm assuming that a lot of you folks don't know already all of the ins and outs of ZOS and its USS support. But OMVS stands for OpenMVS, and it basically is a way or a means to get to the Unix system services available on ZOS, and you run that from the ISPF command shell. You just type in OMVS. From there, you'd be somewhat familiar with Unix or AIX-based systems, and you can issue pretty much the same commands that you're used to there, you know, under the ZOS, you know, OMVS command shell. You could do things like FTP to and from other systems. OBrowse is a very useful tool. It kind of brings up the editor that you're used to on ISPF. OEdit is the same thing, except you can edit the file. But again, the nice feature about this, rather than using like VI or some other type editors, you're using the basic functions that you're used to already with ISPF. Then we have OPUT, which is just a way, kind of like FTP in a way, but it lets you just move a file that's already on ZOS, you know, that's under the sequential file, the normal set of files that you might be used to. and allows you to put them into the HFS directories. The just another couple of good commands that I found very useful, but I passed them along, just ways to recursively find things. Like, for example, you know, trying to find, you know, your particular level of Java that you need. You know, I might go in there and just start looking for all the jar files. And that just gives you a way to get results on a search. You know, search through all, you know, all of the HFS structures you have authority to. Another good function is, you know, just F24. You know, function key 24 retrieves the last command. So that's obviously real useful. So you don't have to keep retyping your commands when you're in OMDS. Next slide. Now, I just thought I'd give you an example of FTPing, you know, like from PC to VLS. You probably all are aware of FTP, I think, by now. But this is just, you know, just to make sure you're aware that this feature is available, you know, just by ZOS and USS type functionality. That you can actually, you know, from your PC, like for example, if you downloaded a new jar file, you know, something like that, you could just open a Windows command prompt, change to the directory where you have the file you want FTP, and then issue the FTP commands, you know, as are shown on the next slide. I just gave you an example of how to go through all of that, and we won't go through that here. Slide 17. Do a little bit of problem determination in case you run into any troubles when you're after you install this, just to make sure everything's working, so to speak. The first thing you want to do, or the first thing that you might encounter, is failure starting EDIJ, which is, you know, for example, if you just typed EDI7, then for some reason EDIJ didn't get started, or you get an advent or some form of message that is returned to the screen. First thing you want to do is look at the CICS log, the message user file. There's a particular message, or I'm sorry, a file that you find in the CICS job log. And look for messages that start with EDIJ, like zero something. And there's some informational messages. I thought I'd show you the normal operation. You know which ones are normal to see. This is just showing the basically the two parsers getting started. And then, let's see, at the bottom here we've got if you run into problems, if you don't see any EDIJ messages, then you want to check the log and trace files that are under the HFS file. So you'd go into OMVS, change directory to your home directory, and then start looking at these particular files and look for error messages in there. The event log is probably the most useful, event.log, as that is. And, you know, just scroll to the bottom, or max to the bottom, and you might find some form of Java conditions, like a deal, you know, a jar file is not found, or some type of error condition that will help you get to the bottom of it. There's also the DFHJVM ERR file. This may also have some useful information in it. DFHJVM out, that probably won't. That's going to be for more obscure type things. And the last two, the EDIJP001.trc and the number2.trc, those are basically independent traces of each of the EDIJ parser that you started with EDI7. And, of course, you want to look in those, too. Next slide. Okay, if you're running data transformation and you're hitting a problem, of course, as always, start with your print file. That's always the first place to go. And a common problem that you would see, like, for example, would be this AM0005. That's basically saying that we cannot determine, you know, what's in the XML data, like the content is not allowed, probably from encoding. You want to check your encoding on the input or on the DTD or schema that you have in the DTD's directory to make sure it's EBCDIC-based. Now, for example, another condition that might occur is if the main transaction hangs, like in other words, your main transaction that you're running that actually invokes WDI, if it hangs on you for whatever reason, use CEDX. That's a real useful tool. I don't know if you've all used that or not, but it's a real good tool to capture background transactions and debug them. In other words, CEDF is good for when you're running a terminal transaction, such as EDIW. But EDIX is it allows you, like, for example, in this first bullet, CEDX, EDIM, comma, on. That basically is our message broker transaction. It runs in the background. It's started by the main task, like EDIW, for example, as well as EDIJ. So you might turn on two sessions, two different CICS sessions, to CEDX on each of those background tasks. And then as soon as they get started, that CICS session will pop up, and then you can start debugging through, that particular task. And then, of course, on your third session, you want to trace the EDIW task, which is the main task. Now, the other thing, if you run into a hang condition, you always want to look for some form of abend or something probably extreme, more likely has occurred. For example, there's AJ P3 abends. I think they usually start with A as in alpha, J as in Java, type abend conditions. And again, you're probably going to run into these, though, like on your first invocation, things that you're just initially getting things set up. There's one particular problem I thought I'd put in here, which is just tough to debug. That's why I included it here. And this is the case where EDIM never gets started. So in other words, you're running CEDX on EDIM, you run your main task, well, EDIM never gets started, but you see the start being issued from EDIW. Now that could very well be that you have some temp storage queues defined as recoverable that need to be non-recoverable. And those are the ones that start with D as in David and F as in Frank. Next slide. Okay, another more common condition, again, this would happen during setup, is like a 4038 LE abend. And again, that would come out in the CICS job log. You might see something like this program IO stream is missing. That would tell me that you did not install the C++ component under CICS, so you want to go to the section in the install guide, 3.1.4, to do that. There was another problem that we had found, which was fixed by a PTF, UK11594, and this was just a simple problem where we did not include the EDIDT UTL program in the PPT. So we fixed that sample on that PTF, but you don't really have to go out and install that PTF. You can just fix it yourself manually, given the defined program statement I have there. The last bullet on this slide, we're talking about getting a particular message broker error. Again, that would be issued by EDIM. That's the message broker. And just saying, load for DLL failed. Make sure that, via RDO, that you actually have this particular program defined. The common cause for this is that, when you installed 3.2, you basically used your old 3.1 type definitions. In other words, you didn't add all of the message broker programs, et cetera, all of the new functionality that was put onto 3.2. Oh, next slide. Now we've got some PLT options. This is for automating the starting and stopping of the parser. You've got the PLT PI, which is the post-initialization. You want to add this EDIJ STRT program to the third initialization phase. And I just give you the sample entry there. And it basically just this. If you do this, then you do not have to start the parsers manually with EDI7 by the terminal. And the complement to that is the shutdown PLT, where you can stop the parsers automatically. Again, no need to do the manual EDI8 from a terminal. It just automatically stops when the CICS region comes down. Okay, next slide. That's it for the WDI specifics of this presentation. Now I'm going to go into some of the general things that, general resources that we have out there for you to use. These are general WebSphere product resources. We've got DeveloperWorks, which is good for technical information on WebSphere products. We have the second bullet is about the events link, which leads you to webcasts and other conferences. We've got the WebSphere.org website, which just user group type information. And we've got IBM Education Assistant for self-help modules to help you get up to speed. These are for various products. And then, of course, we've got the ESR tool, which is for Passport Advantage. And then we've got the My Support link, which is very, very useful. I have a feeling a few of you all, you know, are doing that already, but if you're not, you definitely want to do that, because you'll get, you know, you can be automatically notified of new documents that are added, you know, of upcoming webcasts, things like that, all kinds of different things that you can get in a weekly email, and you can pick multiple different products as well. It wouldn't just have to be WDI, it could be, you know, any product under the WebSphere brand. So, that concludes the presentation. If we can move on to questions and answers now.
Thank you, John, for a great presentation. At this point, Kevin, we would like to open the lines for questions.
Thank you. If you'd like to ask a question today, simply press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touch-tone telephone. If you're using a speakerphone, we do suggest that you make sure that your mute function is turned off so that your signal can reach our equipment. Once again, if you'd like to ask a question at this time, please press star 1 on your phone, and we'll pause for a moment to give everyone an opportunity to signal. So we'll take our first question from Steve Dickens with Prudential Financial. Please go ahead.
Hi, John. Great job on the presentation, as usual.
Hi, Steve. Thank you.
Question I have is the Data Interchange CICS product a separate product from DI for ZOS? And the second part of that is, do I require the ZOS version to run DI CICS?
It's actually,
on the mainframe, of course.
Yes, the WDI 3.2 ZOS product is, you know, comes fully equipped for the batch version and the CICS version. So you already have both. You've already purchased both. You don't have to go out and get anything else, but you would have to go through the installation part that's specific to CICS and the installation guide. So there's a whole section or whole chapter. I think it's chapter 3, basically, that you have to go through to complete it. But it's all already there. You've already got it.
Okay, and it is, and the batch version is required to run CICS.
Well, yes, but you already have that installed, right?
Yes, I do.
That you're already using. So, but yeah, the answer would, in other words, you wouldn't just skip chapters 1 and 2 of the install guide. You definitely have to do chapters 1 and 2, and then you would do 3, you know, for the CICS part.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. You're welcome.
Once again, it's star 1 for questions. And at this time, there are no further questions.
Okay, thank you, Kevin. At this time, we'll conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation, and remember, a replay of this presentation will be available on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site early next week. We hope you'll join us for future presentations, which will also be announced on the site. Thank you very much for joining us today, and thank you, John, for presenting today. Have a great day, everyone.
Thank you.